is Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello and welcome to Absolute Rally, Episode 5, Season 15, Happy Hump Podcast. We are at the exact middle point of the Kielder-supported Absolute Rally 10 series podcast. Obviously, we do them in banks of 10. If you're not up to speed yet, all the old episodes are on absoluterally.co.uk if you want to go and find those. And also, before we forget, the guys who got involved in doing the charity donations for the Kielder mugs, thanks so much. Hopefully, you've all got your mugs now. I think there's still about 15 mugs left, folks. As I say, if you can make a donation, it can be to any charity you want, and we've sent these mugs now all over the world. There's some going to Canada, New Zealand, Australia, and I think there's even one going to Wales. There you go. So we are prepared to send them anywhere anyway. So if you could do that, they are quite sought after. They're quite cool mugs as well, obviously. And Dan, We the Terrors, obviously always does cool stuff. So yeah, if you could do that, that'd be great. One last thing as well before we go any further. iTunes, we've had some great reviews on iTunes. If you could take a moment to just click on the artwork if you listen on iTunes, and it will take you, leave us a review. It helps. It helps with charts and stuff like that, which in turn helps us with our marketing partners. So there you go. A bit of admin at the top of the program, just for a change, because there's only two of us this week. I don't know what I think. Is Jack Benyon covering some kind of grass tracking event or something? Right.
Yeah, some single venue, actually.
Some single venue. Somebody tweeted that before. That made me laugh.
Single venue. I think it's part of, maybe is it some testing for the Motorsport New Circuit Championship?
Something along those lines.
It's definitely on a race circuit, but it is somewhere sunny. That's probably the only advantage. Or maybe more sunny than here. Sunny, well, it's nice at the minute, isn't it?
It's all right. It's a little bit drizzly here, I'll be honest with you, in the cold northwest. But and Trevor Agnew is away telling people how to sell cars. So he's not with us this week. We've got Matt Edwards coming up towards the end of the podcast, and we've also got a little bit with Craig Breen as well. Craig on Fine Fettle. So we'll catch up with Craig very, very shortly. But so it's just me and Ryan at the top of the programme. I was a little bit busy last weekend. I was spitting my dummy out in service areas because I lost fair gear and everything else, but we battled through. But I tried to keep up to speed with Rally Sweden, obviously looking at what was going on social media and stuff like that. But as ever, Ryan Champion was all over it, wasn't you, Ryan?
Well, I did watch it. Yeah, I watched with interest. It was an exciting rally. Not conditions you want to see on a Swedish rally, that's for sure. But Sweden's got this warm spell of weather that we've had in the UK, and it looked like a gravel rally at times, quite honestly. But it made it very tricky, and meant that pretty much everybody made a mistake at some point.
Yeah, I watched some of the highlight packages yesterday and seen a couple of videos on Twitter. There were so many people who relied on these snowbanks that everybody always relies on. Even the great Marcus Grönholm, who came back, of course, for his 50th birthday present to himself, relied on the fact that a snowbank could save him. And in essence, they probably gave a false sense of security to many drivers.
Well, there was some that certainly benefited from them. I mean, funnily enough, Oit Tanak obviously took a commanding win in the end, but that wasn't quite the clear picture. But he did put in he was the one really who kept his nose clean, stayed out of trouble, and delivered a performance that we've been expecting for the last sort of five or six rallies, quite honestly. But everybody behind him did rely on the snowbanks. I mean, none more so than the second place man, Pekka Lappi, who had probably the biggest moment you will ever get away with, and keep going on a rally.
I think it was the sunglasses. I think to be that cool to wear those sunglasses, I think you were always going to get away with stuff wearing them.
The Timo Salonen spec, yeah. Sunglasses.
absolutely. How cool. Yeah, well, I must admit, I seen that one last night, and watching it in retrospect, you kind of know he's going to get away with it because obviously, you know, the result of the event. And we always, when we do these podcasts, we always rely on the fact that our listeners know what the result is. But watching it last night, if I would have been watching that live or on the day and I wouldn't have known what was going on, that was guaranteed he's not coming back from that one.
Yeah. I mean, he was certainly very, very lucky. And actually, Timo Salonen nearly did something very similar. It's just he found a tree in the way.
Yeah.
That was interesting, that, though, because it obviously stopped him going over. It did bend the cage. It meant he had to pull out the rally. But then, amazingly, M Sport were allowed to chop a bit out of the cage and weld a bit in.
I was really surprised by that, and I was going to ask you about that, because, you know, you've done international rallies, I've done international rallies, I've been over on international rally, and obviously it's got to be scrutinized again, and you know, things about cages are well documented. I was really surprised that was allowed to happen.
Yeah, so was I. Because we're used to seeing, you know, reasonable accidents in WRC where the cars are repaired and they carry on, unless there's cage damage. And if there's cage damage, that's the car out for the weekend. So it was, you know, unusual to I mean, obviously the FIA let them fix it. M Sport do weld their own cages into the cars. And I think there was a comment, well, M Sport do their own roll cages, and that was why. I mean, they don't actually produce their own roll cages, but they do weld them into the cars themselves. But it was certainly unusual to see a mechanic going at a car worth best part of £1 million with an angle grinder to chop a roll cage out of it.
Yeah, well, you know what, I seen one of the guys with like a ball peen hammer just hitting the roof skin, and that took me back to GB 2015 when my lads went at my old Fiesta with a ball peen hammer trying to get, funny enough, not quite as bad a damage, but we crushed that corner of the car, and it just kind of took me back to then. But it did give me a wry smile when you think, as you say, the value of those cars and how the boys have to go to work on them and how merciless they kind of have to get. To almost, it's just brute force to get it back out, isn't it?
Yeah, and in fairness, you know, somebody said to me yesterday, I can't believe they just chopped that bit out and welded another bit in. And in fairness, that's exactly what would happen in the workshop. It's just that, you know, the facilities at hand are maybe slightly different. But having said that, the teams are geared up to get a car back out on the rally. And as we've seen, you know, by the time the cars are repaired and on stage again, it's hard to tell the damage that they've had.
Looking at obviously the runners and riders and kind of how the events unfolded, Oit is the dominant winner. I seen a great interview with Tommy Mackin on WRC Live, and you know, Tommy kind of comparing his whole demeanor at the moment to when he was at his best. Just that, you know, just knowing that he's got the measure of all this. Is he unstoppable?
Nobody's unstoppable, but you would have to say, and this has been coming, we've talked about this for, I would say, 7 or 8 rallies now, 3 of which Tanak did win on the bounce, but the combination of Oit Tanak and that Toyota are probably the fastest in the championship. Is he unstoppable? We'll see, won't we? The others certainly have to find something, but Sebastian Ogier is getting on clearly very well with the Citroën. The engine seems to be strong on that car. Coming back to something like tarmac on Corsica, then who would bet against Ogier in a Citroën? But you'd have to say, in terms of if you were going to lay a bet for the championship now, I think I personally would put my money on Oit Tanak.
Do you know what I find really interesting, and again, we're hopping around a little bit here. Obviously, the news that's came out, and you know, joking aside, Jack tweeted about this because it's something we spoke about quite a bit on the podcast with regards to Corsica coming up, and Andreas being benched for Corsica in place of now having obviously Danny, Seb Loeber and Thierry Neuville. I made a bit of a note over the weekend. I just scribbled something, you know, you kind of make notes on your phone. And this was the note that I made. Bearing in mind, obviously, this was before I knew what happened even on Sweden. Do Hyundai need to win the manufacturers this year to remain in? And basically, the point I'm trying to make is, for the good of WRC, do we want Hyundai to win the manufacturers this year? Because if they don't, would they pull?
They've put in a huge amount of investment. I would hope no is the answer to that. Would it be good for the sport if they won the manufacturers? Of course it would. Absolutely it would. Can I see it again against the strength of Toyota? Well, we'll have to see. But yeah, for sure, for the championship, it would be good if Hyundai did win the manufacturers. But we saw at the weekend, I mean, Mickelson was for a long time in second place, but he was in second place because he'd made no mistakes, really, and his speed just wasn't quite fast enough to keep him there. As we saw, he was hunted down by Lappi and then ultimately hunted down by his teammate, who was also saved by a snowbank. And Andreas, you know, it was his best rally for a while. He was consistent. He didn't make mistakes, but ultimately his speed wasn't quite there. He's still not quite happy in this car. And we heard Loeb after Monte Carlo saying the car moves around much more than he was used to previously at Citroën. So I think Hyundai do have to make a step forward with the car. There's clearly something that is holding that car back. I've seen comments that the engine's maybe not quite as strong, but clearly from what Loeb said, the chassis, in his opinion, isn't to his liking. So Hyundai are going to have to draw on all their resources that they've got, and they've got huge resources in Germany. They need to make a step forward with that car to match the opposition if they do want to fight this year.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's just one of those things where you're thinking about stuff and you think, you know, Toyota on a crest of a wave. You know, if for instance Oit wins the drivers, that would be great. I think that would be great for the sport, and because I think it's just a great story. In fact, the trailer's starting to run now, right? I'm sure you've seen it. Obviously, Oit Tanak, the movie's coming out, I think, in the next week or two, which just looks amazing. And I kind of forgot, I indirectly work with Marco Martin Motorsport probably 7 or 8 years ago. And in timelines we're working out, it was actually Oit Tanak Super 2000 car that we were looking after. And I'd kind of forgot, you know, because it's got all the footage there and stuff like that. And you forget that he kind of went completely out of favour, a bit like Andreas did, I suppose. He kind of went backwards into a Group N car, I think it's at some point, and then came back, obviously, with Super 2. And then obviously he was dropped by M Sport and brought back by M Sport and everything else. It is a proper roller coaster story, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And not only, yes, M Sport brought him back, but don't forget M Sport dropped him from the senior team as well. And, you know, he was relying on the DMAC team. So on a couple of occasions, he was driving the DMAC car, which he went very well in. And then that put him back into the senior M Sport team. So, you know, it has taken Oit Tanak a long time to get here. You know, he's been around the world championship now for 10 years. It's been a fight for him, but nonetheless, he's made it work. He's stuck it out. He's come back all these times, and whether that has made him a stronger driver or not, I don't know. But you just have to look at how cool he is now. And you know, we've heard it so many times in Formula One about the Iceman, about Kimi Raikkonen, but Oit Tanak, he's just cool as you like. And at the minute, he can just turn it on and win rallies. And if he has trouble-free rallies, then he could become dominant. But what was quite exciting for me at the weekend was the speed we saw from unexpected sources, because we expected Tanak to be quick. We expected, in fact, all the Toyotas to be quick. Maybe Chris Meek didn't quite have the mileage in the car to do that. We thought Neville would be quick. We thought Ogier would be quick. But who saw Timo Sunnen leading and potentially taking his first WRC win? I mean, yes, ultimately, it didn't work out for him, but it was tricky conditions. He was incredibly quick. And to underline the performance of the Fiesta, Elvin Evans was also on a stunning pace. And, you know, Elvin had a number of stage wins. And if things had gone a bit better for him, then he should have been right on the podium. So it was great to see M Sport showing such pace. But then, of course, we've got Lappi as well. And to underline that the Citroën is clearly working. I mean, on, you know, the sort of the last day and a half where Tanak had a commanding lead, you know, it was Lappi that was setting the pace and looking the exciting driver. He's found his confidence again. He's found his mojo again, and he looked a lot more like the Esa-Pekka Lappi that we saw of 2 years ago at Toyota. We talked a few times about last year how he just didn't seem the same driver for whatever reason, but he seems to have re-established his confidence, re-established his form, and that'll be interesting to see going forwards, to see if Lappi, Sunnen and M Sport with Elvin as well can carry that momentum and carry that performance into the next rallies.
One driver who kind of suffered at M Sport, and I think there was so much hanging on Rally Sweden, you know, it was Pontus Tiedemann. Of course, you know, they did Monty to kind of get used to the team and get used to the car and everything else. And there was so much riding on this. It almost felt like there was too much riding on it, right?
Yeah, it's difficult when you've got one rally, isn't it, to show what you can do. And yes, he did Monte Carlo, but ultimately, as you said, they used Monte Carlo as live preparation for Sweden. And unfortunately, he had that throttle problem on the first morning and never really recovered from that. And to be honest, it was difficult to draw any real conclusions. He wasn't particularly consistent in his stage times. He set some good times, but then he set, you know, a number of shall we say, average times. So yes, he had problems early on, and that sort of robbed him of any sort of early form on the rally, you know, because he was very, very quick on his previous entry to Sweden in a WRC car a couple of years back. But that initial problem just held him back and he never recovered from it. And he took an eighth place finish, I think, just in front of the first R5 car, which in the end was an underwhelming result. So, you know, hopefully for him, he keeps his backers on side and he gets out again. But as you said, when the pressure's on for that one result and just some technical problem can creep into one of these expensive cars, and that's the end of your competitive weekend, really.
And it's, you know, the we speculated how much it costs to go and do, you know, one event, two events in these. And these cars, you know, that's a lot of money to find again, especially when you've not had that little bit of luck. I think he had some problems with a throttle sensor or something like that. I think early doors, and obviously he was then playing catch up. But again, I think he was hoping for stage times. I think as much as anything, I think a lot of these younger drivers probably go in and, you know, like it's a team who put in stage times, and at least they've got something to hang the hat on. You know, maybe not necessarily a win, but certainly stage times where you can go to people and go, look, there's the proof. And unfortunately, he didn't really have that.
No, and I'm sure that exactly what you've just said, Pontus Tiedemann at worst hoped he'd have a weekend like Teemu Sunnenen's, where, you know, Sunnenen showed undoubted speed. We've mentioned this previously. Sunnenen's been a little bit under the radar for too long for me, but that's exactly the sort of performance he needs to put in, where he's consistently fast. And yeah, okay, the result didn't come, but he was consistently fast through the rally. Really exciting to see. And I'm sure Tiedemann wanted to put in that sort of performance, but his problems on the first day meant he had a bad road position, and he just was never able to recover from that. But we certainly didn't see maybe the sparks of excitement from Tiedemann that he would have hoped, and certainly his supporters would have hoped.
This is Absolute Rally.
Absolute Rally continues to be partnered by the Kielder Works team, who remain fully committed to the sport and are pioneers of the latest technology. Kielder cordless tools are tailored for all forms of competitive action.
Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
And welcome back to Absolute Rally. You mentioned Chris. Obviously, you've just mentioned about mileage and things like that for Chris. I think he's probably, obviously, would like to have won the first two rallies in Toyota. I'm sure he would have done. But I'm convinced he'll be pretty satisfied for where he is. And dare I say, playing his way in quite nicely to where perhaps Jari Matti's status is, if that makes sense. Because it's Jari Matti who's kind of struggling now. You know, he went on record to, you know, he's won it, the event, multiple times. And, you know, I think even the guys at MN, you know, did a piece with him a couple of weeks ago talking about what it's taken to win Sweden. He didn't kind of follow his own advice. And he's kind of paying the price now, where Chris is just, from a manufacturer point of view, scoring good points. He's fourth in the drivers. I think he'll be very satisfied for where he's at the moment.
Yeah, to a degree. I agree with you to a degree. I think Chris Meek will be maybe a little bit frustrated after the weekend, because he wants to be competing. He wants to be competing at the sharp end. But you're quite right in that it was maybe a little bit unrealistic to expect that he could fight for the win or right at the sharp end. But I'm sure he still expected that. I'm sure he still hoped for that. And you know, I saw some of his interviews at the weekend, and it was suddenly the frustrated Chris Meek again. It wasn't the happy, relaxed, I'm really enjoying this car Chris Meek. It was like, this is frustrating, you know. He talked a lot about road position, but actually Thierry Neuville, one car behind him on Saturday, was setting, you know, excellent times. So it wasn't all about road position. He clearly just didn't feel quite as confident as he needed to be in that Yaris. But nevertheless, like you said, he's had two solid finishes. He is fourth in the championship. He's coming on to events that he will be stronger at. I mean, you know, Monty has been hit and miss for him. Sweden's never been successful for him. I think this is actually his best ever finish in Sweden, to finish sixth. So it's like you said, it's solid, and now he can build on that. He's got the mileage, and he's coming to rallies that he knows much better, and he's had good results at. So it's certainly not a bad start for him. And as you said, thankfully it wasn't him that went off a couple of times and didn't get any form of result. That was unfortunately Jari Matti. So he's done well for the team and embedded himself in quite nicely.
We made reference to this when Citroën made their announcements, and you know, maybe when we speak to Craig a little bit later on, he may shed a little bit more light on this. But with the unfortunate thing that happened with Sebastian Ogier, and obviously Lappi being the man of the moment as opposed to being the other way around, it's almost like they switched roles. Okay, you know, obviously Ogier won on Monte Carlo, but this really does highlight the fact of a two-car team when you look at the manufacturers as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we said, you know, ultimately Citroën are going to struggle. Strange decision to run the two cars when you're spending that much money anyway, but they've clearly ruled out the manufacturer's championship because simply they're not going to win it. I mean, we touched on it, and I'm sure we'll come back to it in a few minutes, but when you've got Hyundai not only entering three cars on every rally, but they can choose between four drivers for those three cars, and that's four top-line drivers. That isn't a paying driver in there as well. You've got Toyota with three top-line drivers in there, three cars. M-Sport, we yet to see how many cars they're going to run, but ultimately they're certainly going to have a third car on a number of rallies. So, we're seeing Citroën ruling out the Manufacturers' Championship, which is strange, and they're just going to obviously rely on drivers' results.
Do you find it odd to look at the champion? I know we're only two events in, and you know, I hate myself for actually saying what I'm about to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. 16 points off Sebastian Ogier. 16 points off Oitana. That seems, in Sebastian Ogier's career, that almost seems like a lifetime. I know there was 25, I think there was it last season, but that was so much further on, wasn't it, in the championship?
Yes, and also traditionally, Sebastian Ogier has had a good start to the championship, hasn't he, like you said. So he's the one setting the early pace. So this time it's a little bit different. You know, it's only one retirement ultimately, isn't it? Or one poor rally at this stage in the championship. So it will, I'm sure, equal itself out. But nonetheless, he is in an unfamiliar position. But I think, having said that, you know, if you look at the speed he had in the Citroën at the weekend, he was very, very fast in it. And he must be quite pleased, I would say, with the performance that's in the car, even if he isn't in the championship position that he'd like.
It's a big three events coming up. You know, the South American ones on the bounce, obviously starting with Rally Mexico. And dare I say, that kind of little South American kind of adventure for all the top boys is, I think, it's almost like, what's the best way of describing it? But they're on the bounce, you know, kind of not quite alternate weekends, but you know what I mean? They're very kind of close together. Very obviously, they are the long haul ones all together. And I just think those three events will kind of dictate quite a lot of the early season form will be formed there, because they're proper events as well, aren't they? You know, I've said about Monty in Sweden for the last couple of episodes of the podcast that, you know, they're a little bit lottery events, whereas these are proper events. And of course, we've got Chile, where no one's got notes for.
No, Chile will certainly be interesting. It always is to get a brand new rally in the championship like that. I mean, Mexico. Not that I'm the expert here, but Mexico, you know, is still talked about as being a specialist rally because of the altitude. So, you know, that can affect some cars a little bit more than others. But nonetheless, it's a rally that is known pretty well by the World Championship nowadays. So, like you said, Chile will be interesting, and then back to the European season.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a bit of a nod to WRC two runners. Obviously, there was no big story with regards to Katsuta winning on Pirellis again. I thought WRC2 was quite interesting looking at, you know, front of the show, Gus Greensmith obviously wasn't a rally he kind of wanted to have. Cali Rovanpera was similarly kind of down on pace as well. And you know, it was left really to Ole Christian Wiebe, who was the in the polo, which see, it does seem to be getting stronger, but in the pro area, the pro was Mads Osberg. But I must admit, I couldn't quite get the beginning and the end for Mads Osberg because he seemed to be testing, and there seemed to be footage of him on snow and ice in that car for about a week leading up to Sweden. And I think he's come away from the event saying that there's so much work to do with that car. You know, interesting nevertheless.
Yeah, it was. We had a little bit of banter on Twitter about this during the rally with John Williams, who listens to the podcast, I think, sometimes. And to me, you know, I'm not a fan of WRC Pro, as I said, having a pro class and an amateur class, and then suddenly you've got two winners of WRC 2, and then you've got you know, drivers that are only driving to win WRC Pro, so they're not worried about other people that are in R5 cars fighting for WRC2. And I just think it's an unnecessary layer that the best driver should ultimately be going for the win. And how do you explain it to the casual viewer that the winning R5 car, he was an amateur driver. Well, he's not an amateur driver. It's just that he's not in WRC Pro.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I take that.
And you know, to me, it's just unnecessary complicated. But anyway, you know, Ole Christian Wiebe, he put in a great performance. Obviously, in the new Polo R5 car, drove it very, very well, got it into the top 10, and, you know, took really a comfortable win in WRC 2. And I think Johan Kristoffersen deserves a mention as well. His teammate in the Volkswagen, obviously come across from Rallycross, and you know, looked very at home and set some fantastic times as well.
It's interesting. I think I flippantly we put something out flippantly. I see Sebastian Loeb Racing, by the way. They are fives. They're running R5 Polos. There were some images. They've just signed up a driver for an R5 Polo. So they're obviously not running C3s anyway, but there you go. Anyway, we need to mention the juniors a little bit as well, because obviously a friend of the show and somebody we were trying to support as we go along, Tom Williams, career best fourth on Rally Sweden, come on leaps and bounds from last year and where he ended up. But Tom Christiansen, of course, who did ERC last year, he came over and obviously Swedish events, him and Thomas Radström. Thomas Radström? No, not Thomas Radström, is it?
Dennis, isn't it?
Dennis Radström, yeah. I was thinking, it's his uncle, isn't it? Is it his uncle?
Honestly, I don't know the relationship.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is, by the way.
I was more thinking, how can you have a multiple Le Mans winner winning the juniors? You know, it just seems strange to me, but anyway.
Yeah, Tom Christiansen, anyway. They were going at Hammond and Tong, obviously. A bit of a specialist event, Swedes going at it. But, good effort all round. And obviously, Alex Karani, who was with us last week alongside the American guy who came from what you're involved in these days. He came from the GT Gran Turismo Academy. Sean Johnson, who made his debut in JWRC. So well done to those guys as well on finishing. We need to go to some other bits and pieces, right? I think we've covered Sweden. If folks, if you disagree with anything we say, by the way, and you could disagree with everything, you can tweet us by all means. You know how to find us. It's @absolute_rally, or you can email studio@absoluterally.co.uk. Where do we go next? Ryan, have you got any other business this week?
Have I got any other business? God, I didn't expect you to come to me quite that quickly.
Do you want me to do mine? Do you want me to do mine?
Yes, I have.
Okay, I can do mine if you want.
Go on then.
I'll try to historic event, Petter Solberg, well done. Him and Pernilla, whose birthday it was, nice birthday present. They won in the historic event, which also leads me on to, we had a little bit of a chat and we're going to try and get him back on because he has been on before. The news of Oscar Solberg, which we kind of got a little bit of an inkling of last week because we did some stuff, of course, on the American Championship last week. And I had a little bit of an inkling beforehand and then it was announced the day after the podcast dropped. Again, we're talking about stories, we were talking about Oitanak's story, and of course, Oscar Solberg has already got a video or a movie coming out about what he's done so far, and Born to Drive, and, you know, just to round it off quite nicely, he's going to be in that lovely, which I know you appreciate, right, that lovely livery of Subaru, but driving for Subaru USA and ARA.
Yeah, so I mean that's incredibly exciting for him, isn't it? And I watched his Julian Porter did a great interview with him on WRC Live, you know, and just him saying that he grew up with his dad driving for Subaru and his dad in the blue and the yellow, and now he's going to do that. So an incredible opportunity for him, and obviously he'll be teammates to David Higgins in the American Championship.
I think it's going to be an interesting story. As I say, we're due to catch up with David. Oscar and I had a bit of a chat via text, and we're hoping to get him on over the next couple of weeks anyway. But a great story. It's just seeing those colours again. And I just think it's a happy story. And I think Oscar is probably going to be not too dissimilar to his dad. He's going to be very animated. He's going to be great fun. And I can't wait to see what happens with him over in the American Championship. But I think he's going to be doing so much more outside of that as well. You know, right? I just get this. I'm getting this inkling. You know, we could see him doing so many other things. I don't think there's. I'm guessing this, but I don't think there's any exclusivity there. I think he's free to do other stuff as well outside of it. So we could see him driving other things as well. So,
but don't get Oliver and Oscar confused.
No, that would be a big mistake.
So it's Oliver Solberg we're talking about, isn't it? Yes. Rather than Oscar Solberg.
It is. Sorry. Yes. Thank you very much. Did I say Oscar?
I think you might have done.
Yeah. My bad. Right. Thanks for correcting that, because I'm sure somebody would have texted or emailed.
We might as well
address it now anyway.
And I just checked, and Dennis Radstrom is Thomas Radstrom's son. So we'll get that one out there as well before somebody emails or tweets in about that one.
Very much Alan Partridge-esque. We've gone back to Alan Partridge stuff. The other little bit of any other business, we did the Cambrian Rally last weekend, which was the opening round of the National Gravel Championship over here at BTRDA, and of course the opening round of the British Rally Championship. We got the winner and the current British Rally Champion, Matt Edwards, coming up a little bit later on. The service area, right, was in Moston Street in Llandudno, right in the centre, which is where the finish ramp has been for Rally GB over the last God knows how many years now, since it's been back in the north anyway, and using D-side as a service area. But we used it as a service area for the event. I have to say, I felt it worked really well. And I wasn't too surprised to learn today that, and I kind of had an inkling this was going to happen. It was kind of a little bit of a test bed, and they're looking at doing something similar for Rally GB. Don't quite know what's going to work with all the works teams. I'm sure they'll find a way around it. But there was a nice atmosphere there. There was a lot of casual fans, a lot of casual people milling around, right? And dare I say, smatterings of kind of Ypres.
Well, I mean, that's obviously where, you know, that's the blueprint still, isn't it? And that's the atmosphere that everybody tries to get. And the key thing is, isn't it, the support of the local community, the support of the local council. And, you know, it's great that Llandudno are backing those initiatives, because I'm sure there's a lot of local councils or local governments that would make it a little bit more difficult.
Absolutely, absolutely. But no, a crap event for me, I have to say. Lost their gear after two stages, and we just had to kind of drive it to the finish. But it was a tough event. Well done to all that finished. And it was good to be back out in our little rally car again. But watch this space next time we're out. Your any other business, right, for this week, please?
My any other business, I was going to mention, or I am going to mention, I wasn't going to, I am. This weekend coming is Race Retro at Stoneleigh, so the historic motorsport show really for the UK. Obviously, there is a lot of interest for rally fans because there's a live stage on both the Saturday and the Sunday. I think there's everything there from, you know, Marion Evans in an R5 Hyundai. There's the likes of Dave Wright there in a Focus. You know, Jeff Jones, Ian Gwynne will be there in Subaru World Rally cars. There's all kinds of cool cars. I think there's something like 120 rally cars there. But also on the Saturday evening is a Peugeot Challenge reunion. And I think it's been organised by the brilliant Mr. Kevin Ferber, who obviously was a Peugeot driver himself. But he's got lots of former Works Peugeot drivers there, the likes of Paul Franklin, Johnny Milner, Justin Dale, and then a whole host of the Peugeot Challenge drivers, which obviously myself and Justin came from, you know, the likes of Stuart Jones, Rudy Lancaster. But there's even the likes of Chris Ingram going, and Mr. Jack Benyon will be there as well. And he's obviously on the table with Chris Ingram, Tom Williams and Robert Reed, because he would be, wouldn't he?
Of course he would. Of course he would. He's not going to be slumming it with the likes of you, Ryan Champion.
That's assuming he comes back from his single venue event.
Well, you know, he's
getting into single venues. He said he didn't like single venues. He co-drove for me on a single venue, and now he's gone to some
I think he got off really, really lightly on that comment on this podcast. You know, when you think about some of the grief we get sometimes, albeit leg pulling, but it would kind of slip under the radar. And I think what I'm going to do, I'm keep mentioning it every week until he gets more grief for it.
I think in fairness, he just meant that he likes forest rallying or multi-venue rallying.
Oh, that's what he was trying to say. Don't be trying to cover for him now. Anyway, listen, we're going to go to a little break, folks, and then we're going to come back with Craig Green.
This is Absolute Rally.
Quarter, mid-lift crest, 86 right minus, tightens over jump, opens over 50, sharp left, tightens by 6 on lift crest, over 70, 5 right.
Ireland's leading commercial note supplier, Killian Duffy, has joined forces with 2016 British Rally champion Craig Parry to form On The Pace Note UK. For more information, visit the website onthepacenote.co.uk.
Welcome back to the next section of Absolute Rally. Obviously, Ryan and I talking nonsense at the top of the programme. We thought we'd get somebody who spoke some sense in the middle section, so we thought we'd get Craig Breen. Hello, Craig Breen.
I'm not quite sure if it's big sense, but we'll try our best anyway. How are you doing?
We're all good. We're all good. Right. Do I owe you an apology, Craig? Because Trevor Agnew picked up on something last week, and he said it was really insensitive of me to ask you to come on last week.
Why is that?
Well, it was before Sweden.
No, I hadn't even thought about that, to be fair. No insult, don't worry, that's just
Trevor Agnew shit staring as ever then. Okay, that's fine. We can say that. Bless you, Trev, thank you. Mate, you've first and foremost, congratulations, by the way, on Galway. It looked like you were doing some big skids.
It was a day of big skids. I really enjoyed it, and needed it, was badly needed. I don't think I'd enjoyed it really like that in quite a long time, so it was great. You know, real family atmosphere, should I say. My dad was doing it as well, and working with Tom Gahan again. Tom was the guy that was behind all the SWRC adventure and everything I'd done pretty much up until getting my first professional contract, so it was just really, really nice to be working with all those guys again.
I mean, I've seen a couple of comments since that you said the pace was pretty hot on the rally.
Yeah, no, they don't hang around, and you know the fact that those rallies are so special. How special Ireland is. With the roads over there, when those guys are dialed in and tuned into the, you know, what it takes to be fast over there. When somebody lands on, you know, it's sad to say I'm a bit of an outsider on Irish rally, and it's difficult to be able to match their pace. So yeah, I did. You know, I had to push hard. You know, there's no doubt about it. And, okay, I had a little bit of a disadvantage with I had to run on a slick all day, just given the conditions. Unfortunately, my tire package kind of fell in between a rock and a hard place, and I ran with a slick all day, and some of the weather stages I really had to take a few risks, but I still enjoyed it immensely, I have to say.
Did it take a little bit of getting used to going back to R5 again after after being in this latest breed of WRC cars?
It took a lot longer than what I thought, and I've done a few rallies in between in R5s, but I've never done a really fast high speed rally, and I missed the aero. I really, really missed the aero. Some of the faster stuff on the first couple of days, I had a few surprises that I thought I was down on the back of the car. So it took a while to get into, but once I got a few stages out of the way, it's all okay.
And now, obviously, you've done that. We've seen you back in competition. It's maybe not where you wanted to be. Obviously, what's the rest of the year going to hold?
Well, obviously, the first priority is to get back in the World Championship. And there's a lot of stuff up in the air at the moment. A lot of potential things that can fall into place. So I'm working really, really hard on them in the last couple of weeks, and will be continuing to work hard on them. But I have a few different things to be doing. I'm going to do all I can to go to West Cork the next round of the Tarmac Championship. I'd be fairly confident I'll do that. But I've signed a deal to do a few rounds of the Italian Championship as well with a team in Italy. So I'll be busy, definitely. And there's a few other bits and pieces. I'm going to try and do a bit of karting again. A few other one-off stuff during the year. So I'll not be lying around on the sofa too long anymore.
No, I mean, obviously, it was a real shock for us all not to see you in WRC, and obviously a shock to you, but how close was it? How close did you think you were to having a done deal?
We were 99.9% sure everything was in place. I suppose for September, October time last year, we had I won't say a few options, but there was positive vibes coming from a lot of places, and I think a lot of things changed in the latter stages of the year. Obviously, Citroën decided that they only wanted to run two cars. Then Seb wanted to do Lobo and wanted to do more rallies, so that filled another gap. But just unfortunately, I'd probably taken my finger off the pulse a little bit because I was sure I had opportunity in one place, and then when the opportunity went there, and I went to go back and check with another team, that space was gone, and I just, musical chairs really, unfortunately, I ended up on the bad side of it.
And I mean, just even stepping back from your situation a little bit, we've just talked about it. Is it not really a surprise, Citroën going to the championship with two cars? Because ultimately, the manufacturers are in there to win the manufacturer's title. And realistically, with the strength of Toyota and Hyundai particularly, they're never going to win the manufacturer's championship. Can you make any sense of why they've gone with two cars?
I guess their focus is to try and get Seb to win the drivers' championship, and they want that. I think you're going into it with one hand tied behind your back if you're only there with two cars. So it's obviously that's the strategy from the top. That's the strategy that they want for the brand, is to have a drivers' world champion. So I'm sure they'll do everything in their power to do that. So it is a bit strange, but I suppose that's the way they want to play it. Some other teams want to go and win the manufacturer's championship. They quite clearly want to get a driver's title.
Now, one question that's a little bit easier to ask. Now, you're not at Citroën, but since the C3 WRC has come into the championship, it's shown incredible speed sometimes and clearly been difficult to drive at others. Can you give us a bit of a picture behind that? Why was there this unpredictable nature to the car?
A good question. I suppose from day one, the car had its problems. We tried a lot. We made a lot of changes, as we went along, and I think the car did get a lot better. Especially towards the second half of last year, and again, I think the guys had done a lot of work over the winter. But I don't think there was any one key thing that was holding the car back. It was just a mixture of many different things. Obviously, the first was with the torque split. We changed that quite early in the first year. And then there was the geometry, rear geometry, and then we changed the front geometry at the start of last year. I think it's just a mixture of all those things coming together, really. And I guess, if you're somebody with a lot of experience in a world rally car and you're driving rallies with it, you can maybe put up with it. But when you're somebody like me that's still learning everything and then trying to develop a car on the back of that, and then trying to push as hard as I can in rallies without making mistakes, it just made a very, very difficult combination for everything.
Obviously, Abu Dhabi was obviously the title sponsor. That must have been difficult for you, because I think you had a really good relationship with those guys, didn't you?
Yeah, obviously. Sheikh Khaled gave me my first start in a World Rally car in 2016, and that obviously gave him a contract then after doing the good results in Finland and that. So obviously, you know, they decided to take a sabbatical and to not sponsor the team this year. But you know, I'd be hopeful that that they'll have the name back on the car at some point in the future. But yeah, like you said, they were very pivotal in me getting my chance.
Just looking at what's just been announced today, or rather yesterday, I think it was announced formally, and indirectly Kindred Spirit, but Andreas being benched by Hyundai in favour of Seb Loeb. What's that like, Craig? Because you've had that experience as well.
I pity him. I was in a similar situation myself, but other than last year, I was benched after doing the best result of my career. So that was... That was even harder pill to swallow, I have to say. But it's obviously, again, Hyundai are very focused on winning the manufacturer championship, and they're just trying to play the best card that they can. I think going to a rally with Thierry, Seb, and Danny, you've got three realistic tarmac experts, so it's going to be I won't say a no-brainer, but it's going to be definitely a force to be reckoned with that event. So, I do sympathise with him. I've been replaced by a Seb before, and it's not a nice feeling.
We've spoke about it on the podcast quite a bit. We spoke about Toyota, and you know, obviously that's where Chris is now, and obviously that's a very, very strong lineup. And you know, we've kind of said we've probably been against the rotation of drivers, and I'm sure you'd be against the rotation of drivers. Just how difficult is it to come in and out of a car and still be on the same pace as your teammates that are in it all the time?
Yeah, horrifically difficult. I found it hard last year, and to land back into a car again after such a long time is difficult. You know, regardless of how much testing you do, to get back into competition again is tough. So like even last year, I obviously missed out on Corsica, and I missed out on Spain the year before. So that when I did Rally Germany last year, the last time I'd driven the tarmac rally was 12 months before that, pure tarmac rally. So it can upset the rhythm, definitely. You know, the preferred option is to be in the car for all the rounds of the championship. You know, when something like that happens and you're out of the car, it does definitely upset the rhythm, especially when you're learning everything as well, you know, especially when you're the most experienced.
You mentioned before you're remaining sharp. You could be doing some more rounds of the Irish Tarmac Championship. You also mentioned, of course, the Italian Championship. Just what are we going to be driving over there, Craig? Are we opening up our eyes to new machinery again, or is it an old steed that we've perhaps been in before?
No, it's in a Skoda, Skoda R5. Okay, I've done a few tests under the radar in the last couple of years, but I haven't really driven it in anger before. So, it's something that just came about in the last couple of days. Really, the team Meteor, they want to try and have a go at the Italian Championship, and they wanted somebody to do it, and I see it as a bit of a challenge. Some of the rallies I'd really love to go and do again, San Remo and some other nice rallies like that. So I said, you know, why not? So we put pen to paper, and I'm looking forward to starting that thing as well.
Good man. Is Paul going to be with you?
That's the plan. Yeah, that's the plan. Paul obviously done Galway, and the plan is going forward that he'll do all the rallies that I'll be doing. So looking forward to it.
If you were a betting man, Craig, and I know you're not, but if you was, what odds would you put on Craig Breen doing a round of the WRC this year, at least one?
I'd put a fair few pounds on it, yeah.
Good man, that's what I wanted to hear. And that is the right answer. That is the right answer. Listen, mate, we're not going to keep you because we know you're on your way home. So listen, we really appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on. And hopefully we'll get you on again soon.
I will do, no worries.
This is Absolute Rally.
Whether it's the pressures of service or an issue out on the stages, it's vital to have the right equipment to hand. Kielder cordless tools are tailored for the world of motorsport and are being used throughout all forms of competition.
Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. I hope you enjoyed the top of the show there. And as I say, it seemed a really, really good time to get our current British Rally champion on. And dare I say, Willie Fogg. He seems to be travelling a lot. And I want to talk to him about his travel before we get any further. And it's a big thing that we've talked about on the programme a lot, because I think it probably involves coaching, dare I say. Matt Edwards, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Thank you.
Right, let's go through this. So, Finland, America, Portugal, Africa, Wales. Now, I flippantly said, I'm assuming this is to do with coaching. Of course it was to do with coaching. Just tell us a little bit about what you've been doing, who you've been working with, and how probably this time last year, I'm assuming these opportunities probably weren't coming your way.
Some of them were, to be honest. I was working with Rory Bell 12 months ago, just over 12 months ago. So the first trip was over to Finland, Snow Rally Rings, set up over there, which is fantastic facilities, like 100 kilometres of stages that they regrade overnight and in the Arctic Circle, so there's no snow issues up there. And we did nearly 600 k's in 3 days.
Wow.
Testing over there in his R2 Fiesta, and then came back, went to Texas with Dave Wallingford, who's just getting acclimatised to an R5 Fiesta. So yeah, just a bit of driver training with both of those guys ahead of their programs for this year, and then where was next? We went to Portugal with Rory to test his R2 Peugeot ahead of his first America Cup round, which is this weekend in Faf, using the famous Faf jump stage that they use on WRC Portugal. And then after that, I went to Zambia in Africa with the first R5 car to be imported into that country. So that was an experience, to say the least.
I've seen some of the images, and anybody who follows you on Facebook, obviously you've got your page there and stuff where you're putting stuff up. You know, it was just, yeah, what made me laugh, maybe because I hadn't tuned into it for a little while, but I kind of clicked on it and then I went, well, I know that's the States. And then all of a sudden you kind of go to the next picture and go, no, that's definitely Africa. And that's a hell of a jump. What happened to, I'm assuming, and you know, put me straight by all means, obviously the success you had last year, obviously British Rally Champion, you know, BTRDA National Champion in R5 Fiesta, working with M Sport. Has this come about due to your relationship with M Sport and M Sport sending cars into these places?
Yeah, I think a little bit, definitely. I mean, it's not something they sort of actively promote, but when they've been asked for some help, you know, driving tuition, they've recommended me, which is very kind of them. But yeah, I've worked with a couple of their clients prior to that, that seem to have progressed in a satisfactory manner. So it just seems well that, you know, obviously working with the team, with my own competing, and to work with the same guys for their customers in new cars seems to work well. So, you know, everybody's got an understanding of the car, everybody's got an understanding how each other works, and you can obviously then translate that performance benefit into new customers, and the better the new customers perform, the happier they are, and the better business is for everybody.
Absolutely. The experience in Africa, as I say, genuinely just looked amazing. I was looking at the car being unloaded and things like that, and then, you know, what you know, even, you know, because we've debated, you know, stuff, you know, rallies out in Africa for God knows how long on this podcast about whether, you know, Safari comes back and everything else. That's a completely different conversation. But, you know, are they closing roads over there, or are you encountering people when you're trying to shake a car down? What's it like over there?
Actually, the roads we used over there were private roads. One was it's a local car club. And they've got like a rallycross, motocross type circuit set up over there, which is all closed. It's you know, perfectly safe. Even the school kids know where to walk when they're coming home from school across the fields and things like that. It was a very different experience. And then the second day's test we did was in his parents' ranch. So that was all well controlled and everything like that. So, I mean, the roads are obviously very different and the climate's very different. It's 30 degree heat 1 minute and then monsoon conditions the next and thunderstorms. So definitely a challenge. And, you know, the working conditions out there are very different. Well, life conditions out there were very different. So it was an eye-opener, that's for sure.
How deep can you go when you've got condition? Because obviously, you know, we've done stuff together, and obviously I know the other work you've done with other drivers and stuff like that. When you've got conditions, you know, so changeable like that, and, you know, stages that you may not even encounter yourself before. Of course you haven't. You've not been over to Africa before. No. How difficult is it to kind of sit with somebody and coach them and do that when there's so many variants and also a surface, you know, that's also new to you?
Yeah. Well, the physics of the car are the same wherever you go, I think. It's just adapting a little bit to the, like say, the conditions, and just training the driver, giving him the skills to adapt to the conditions for himself on the rally. I mean, the road we used was apparently, well, we went and looked at a couple of roads that they use on rallies there, just to give me an idea of the relevance of the test road to any rally that he might do, and it was fine. So it gave me an idea of what the conditions might be, and then you just got to build in the tools for the driver to understand, you know, how to feel the grip and, you know, manage the conditions as they change. But we were lucky that, I mean, the car was a day late getting there, so we ended up doing a day's tuition in his Evo 10 to start with, which I think certainly eased the transition into the R5 when we got that. And you know, at the end of 2 days, he was going really well, so it was good.
Happy days. Is this an ongoing thing? Obviously, you've mentioned the guys over in the States. Obviously, Portugal and Finland were attached to a long-term project that you've got going on with Rory Bell. The guys that you've been working with in Africa and the States, is that also ongoing? You know, are these people are going to keep coming back, and you're going to keep working with them and keep developing them?
Yeah, it seems likely, yeah. There's a plan to go out back to Africa just before his first event, and I think as many events as I can get to, I think he'd like me to go to, so that's really good. And then the American customer is likely to come over to the UK and do some work over here as well, mainly because the roads over here, we've got such a varying amount of roads and style of road that we think we can accelerate his learning process over here quicker than in the States, because there isn't that many roads accessible over there for him to get meaningful mileage. So that's, you know, there's a couple of plans going on there for ongoing work. Yeah,
do you know, and I know you've had experience of this as well, and there's lots of academies and stuff like that with going on with co-driver. When you're going over to some of these places and you're working with some of these drivers, I know you're massively, you know, you're almost anorak when it comes to notes, which is obviously what brought all your success. When you're talking to these guys, have these guys got co-drivers that are on the same level as them, or have they got better co-driver? What's the level of co-driver like out there?
Hard to say, really, because on both occasions I didn't really get any experience of who the co-driver would be, although the guy in Africa's wife is actually co-driving for him, and she certainly seemed to be wearing the trousers in the car when she went for a run, so that was quite funny. But no, I think I certainly believe the level of co-driver, or certainly the level of your notes, is half of your potential pace. You know, we can get these guys driving really, really well around the stage. They know inside out, but then you've got to be able to translate it to a road you don't know, and that is, you know, only possible through your notes. So, you know, again, and that is a point I make. You know, it's you can't necessarily expect to be 4 seconds a K faster in an R5 from an Evo 10 unless your notes are up to that increasing pace. So it's definitely a factor that we introduce and talk about a lot, and, you know, and work on a lot. You know, there's scope there to do work with the co-driver, you know, and I've been fortunate to have enough opportunities in that seat as well to understand how that works, and, you know, just link one to the other in the driver's mind so that they can get the most out of it.
Good man. Now, all that, do you find that keeps you sharp as well, even though you're not driving? Is that because you're thinking about what's going on and you're feeling, you know, everyone always talks about you feel it in your bum, quite literally in these instances, you know, the fact that you're being moved around and you're feeling, you know, traction and grip and stuff like that, even though you're in the passenger seat coaching, has that helped you get ready for your season?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's no doubt that, well, certainly for me, when I'm sat in the car, I'm pretty much driving it in my mind whilst the driver is actually physically driving it. So, you know, that's how I give my feedback to the driver as to what I'm feeling in the car, and that certainly keeps me sharp. And certainly in an R5 like that, it's really important to be in it as much as you can, whether you're driving or not. So it's definitely a help being sat in it and just, you know, feeling the physics of the car more regularly than 5 or 6 times a year.
So coming into 2019, obviously you're the defending British Rally Champion. The season for 19, was there always a plan to defend it? Because obviously last time you were on, you genuinely didn't know what was going to happen next and where you were going to go. Was it in the back of your mind to defend your title?
Yeah, I think it was always likely. You know, we are looking to try and do a few other bits abroad as the year progresses. But, you know, like I say, when we last spoke, we didn't know whether it was going to be, you know, abroad all year or come back and defend the British. But we're fortunate to get UASA batteries on board for 2019. And, you know, the British base of that company would benefit the most from some UK exposure. So that was an influence, you know, in coming back to defend the British title. And, you know, we're grateful for their help and getting on board with the programme.
It's a brand which it's a motorsport brand in many ways, because it's immediately when I seen it on your car, I did think touring cars, to be honest with you, because they've had a long association, of course, with touring cars, and it's great to see them looking perhaps outside the obvious, which, you know, most people do kind of think touring cars is a base now for motorsport in the UK, because everybody talks about the TV and everything else, but it's nice to see them looking outside of the obvious and coming to our sport, of course, a rally.
Yeah, I mean, it's a different audience, and obviously there's a good business relationship with Swift and UASA with the touring caravans and the motorhomes for batteries and things. So, you know, it's a good link up for them commercially as well. So, you know, if there's a commercial benefit, then that certainly helps us go rallying.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, coming into the new season, a change of co-driver. Which, you know, it's not very often you change co-drivers. I can think of probably three of your co-drivers in the last 15 years.
Really?
So, yeah.
Only three?
I can only think of three. So it's not something you do on a regular basis, is it? Is
change co-driver? You try not to. But, so, you know, different circumstances this year, you know, for Darren and myself meant, you know, we had to sort of just part ways temporarily. You know, and Patrick I've worked with before, a very experienced co-driver, bags of enthusiasm. So, you know, he was an obvious choice.
And back, of course, I suppose, dare we call home now. We mentioned M Sport before, another season with M Sport, the comfy pair of slippers.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. I mean, the R5, you know, to get into it now is, again, like you say, a comfy pair of slippers. And I think that is a big factor in how we did at the weekend, was that, you know, okay, we had a few setup things that we needed to try on the test as a result of the GB, the feeling we had in the car in GB. So as soon as we put them to bed, it felt comfortable again. And, you know, just knowing and understanding the car and just having that mileage in it that we've had the last 12 months was a big help, I think.
There was a big, obviously there's been concerns all round. What was season three going to be for the BRC, you know, in its third year back type of thing? And then all of a sudden we had entries, and we had entries coming in. We had a very, very strong R5 entry. And you know, you were dicing with Tom. Tom's program was announced quite late in the day, really, in comparison to obviously what you guys announced, what you were doing. Were you surprised how quickly Tom was dicing with you?
No, not at all. No, I mean, he's got a lot of experience. He's done a lot of mileage. You know, he's experienced in those cars on those stages. You know, we were over a second a K behind him on GB. So, you know, it was no surprise that he was up there. Same with David. So definitely no surprise that he was at the sharp end there. I was prepared for that. I was prepared to be behind them, to be honest. I think that was where my mind was at the start of the rally, not in a negative way, but I just thought, well, if I can be somewhere near but in the top three, that would be good. You know, just as long as I felt comfortable and confident in the car, that was where I was. And to string the first three stages together and be in the lead, you know, I just thought, well, you know, we feel good in the car, so we'll just go with it. And I didn't really plan to go any faster or slower from the first stage onwards. You know, that was going to be my pace for the day, and if it was good enough, it was good enough. If it wasn't, then we'd happily take, you know, the points that pace got us, really.
I watched one of the onboards, and somebody made a very, very obvious comment, but until you've either worked with you or watched a lot of your onboards, and it was Max Utting who commented on it, and he couldn't believe how little the steering wheel moved on that onboard. And do you know what? It wasn't until he actually mentioned it on the video on Facebook, and then I watched it, and then, of course, thought about some of the stuff we spoke about as well in the past. It was there's probably very, very little input, really, and it's all kind of through the hands. It looked, what's the best way? It actually looked uneventful is probably the, and I don't mean that in a discourteous way.
I like that you say that, because then you can go and watch your intel from what we've spoken about.
Yeah, mine's like a war.
Well, that to be honest, that is how I, you know, when I go and look at my in-car, when I, you know, I'm sort of reviewing my own driving, that's what I look at first. And that's, you know, I mean, you can't always tell when you're driving what's going on, because you're thinking about maximising what you've got, you know, with your package that you've got. So when you look back at the in-car and the hands are busy, that's the warning sign for me that there's something not quite right. So, you know, looking at the test footage from the rally, from the pre-event test, you know, that was a good sign that everything was, you know, where I needed it to be. So, you know, from that point on, I didn't think about setup or anything. Just drive the car, and, you know, if you're relaxed and the car's working, theoretically, there shouldn't be much going on behind the wheel.
Mm. There's a strong group this year. You know, there was a strong enough group at the beginning of last season, but just looking at, you know, obviously Tom had the punctures and had to retire, but, you know, you look at the times, you know, Tom's there, David's there, Martin's there. And then you start looking at the likes of Josh Moffat coming over as well, who's having an incredible amount of seat time, of course, as ever in his R5. There's certainly enough to keep you on your toes, isn't there?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, obviously, we're going to Tarmac next, which is their forte. We've got Desi Henry as well. He was going well. So I think it'll be tighter again on the Tarmac. You know, there's no slouches in that top ten. So you definitely got to be sharp. And, you know, to get a win on the board, again, first round, the fact it was the Cambrian added a little bit of pressure or incentive for me, because I really wanted to win the rally, but I wasn't going to sacrifice winning the rally for, you know, the championship. I wanted a good start in the championship more than anything. But yeah, it's going to be a tough day. I said to Tom, I think halfway through the day, it's going to be a long day if you're giving it 110% for three stages and you're only 1.8 seconds ahead or whatever it was at the time. It's going to be a long year and an intense year if every stage is down to a second or two. So, you know, that's what drives everybody forward. That's what keeps everybody on the toes. And then, you know, at the end of a year like that, if you manage to get some WRC 2 hours in the middle, that's what keeps everybody sharp and up to that level as well. And that's what everybody wants. There's no point competing for 10 or 20 seconds a stage, because it doesn't bring your performance up to the international level.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think the other healthy thing as well from a BRC point of view is that, you know, they like to put the brands there as well. Obviously, we've got Ford next to your name, we've got Hyundai next to Tom's, we've got Skoda next to David and Martin McCormick, and you know, it just adds another flavour to it, doesn't it? You know, it just adds a different, you know, we've all feared in the past when we had the dare I say, the one make championship, that was the DS3s in BRC for a year or so. Now we've got something different. You know, we're all concerned about R5 and costs and everything else, which I'm sure you're more than aware of, but it's nice to see different marks there as well, because, again, like what you've just said about your driving and the other drivers, it's the same for the brands, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to keep, I mean, there's obviously a new Fiesta coming out shortly, so that, you know, that's a real positive thing, because the car in its current guise is obviously still competitive and still capable of winning. So hopefully with a bit more performance out of the new car, that'll be exciting for the championship as well. Hopefully it'll make it less exciting for me. I'll have a little bit more help. But, you know, it's great just to have that level of competition and the depth of entry as well this year. You know, and hopefully with the number of that top 10 being from Ireland, they'll sustain a championship, you know, all through the year with the amount, there's two events over there and one just off the boat in Scotland, if you like. So, you know, it's more achievable and more, you know, there's more chance of them getting to those events than there ever has been as well.
Is there anything that you, and I don't want you to give away too much, but as you've just said, the next round does go to Tarmac, and, you know, for us, I suppose, from the mainland over here, we always think it's Tarmac is probably our secondary surface, if you like. As I say, normally the Irish boys are very, very quick on the sealed surface. What do you do between now and then, Matt, to kind of get you in that mindset? Obviously, there's a pre-event test. Is there anything else that happens between now and the pre-event test?
It's a new event for me, so I'm just going to be trying to view as much on board as I can from previous years, and just do a bit of homework and just, you know, as I always have done, just see and gather as much information as I can, and just sort of not focus on what's just happened too much. You know, I've watched the in-car a few times already, and I probably won't look at that again now, but, you know, until we get back on gravel. But certainly look at some Ulstering cars from last year and just try and get my head back into like tarmac driving, if you like, and just have a look at some onboard so it's not all too unfamiliar when you get there. And, you know, that, again, that helps for making the notes and just being a bit more familiar with your surroundings.
Good man. Just going full circle, coming back, if people do want to get in touch with you, Matt, with regards to coaching and things like that, what's the best way of getting hold of you?
Emmy Rally Sport on Twitter or Facebook, just Matt Edwards on Facebook is the easiest one. With the travelling about, the phone isn't always available on the normal phone numbers and things, but yeah, Twitter and Facebook is Emmy Rally Sport on Instagram as well. So there's plenty of ways to get in touch, and I'm always posting some sort of exotic photo.
there was some from Llandudno the weekend. Yeah, well, that's right. Finland, USA, Portugal, Africa, Llandudno. That's the way to follow Matt
and
around.
Now Portugal again.
Yeah, now Portugal again.
And then maybe even Chile after last week.
of course. We had the Chileans on the Cambrian as well.
We went followed them down to Walter's Arena on Sunday and did day's testing with those guys as well. So I was googling flights to Santiago on Sunday night.
Good man.
Yeah, busy enough.
Good man. Listen, Matt, thanks so much for joining us. Folks, that is the end of this week's episode. We do appreciate the download. You know where we live. If you do download us via iTunes, if you could give us a 5-star review, that really does help us with our supporters, of course, Keel the Tools and everything else. That is a massive, massive help. You know how to get hold of Matt. You've just heard about that, ME Rally Sport. And we will be back same place in your little podcast hole next week.
Absolute Rally, powered by the Keel the Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.